Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you have any questions about how to do that, you can also email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org, but it's really easy. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to Khenchol Lodro Taye Rinpoche, who is a Tibetan Rinpoche teacher and who's giving a workshop and talk in Santa Fe. Right now, I would like to welcome Nina Wise. She is a theater artist and writer, and she'll be presenting the Kepler Project, When Science Lost the Soul, as a part of the Lensix Under Construction series of works in progress this Saturday, March 1st at 7:30 at the Lensix. Welcome to KSFR.
Thank you.
Now, who was Johannes Kepler, and how did you get interested in his work?
I got interested in his work through my collaborator, Ralph Abraham, who's a mathematician. He's one of the founders of chaos theory. And I was teaching at the university in Santa Cruz and met with him. I live not close to there, so I would commute partly to teach and partly in order to see Ralph. We're old friends, and he's one of the great, I think, living geniuses of our time. And we would have lunch after my class, and generally with Ralph, I sit down and go, okay, what are you thinking about? And I listen to him. And he has this amazing mind that sort of covers enormous amounts of information, and both in terms of mathematics and also history, worldview, cosmology, all of that. And he had been thinking about Kepler because he's very, very concerned about the condition our planet and our species is in. And he believes and hopes that we're on the brink of a paradigm shift of a very major scale. A paradigm shift that has to do with looking at the nature of reality in a completely different way. And in order to understand the paradigm shift that he believes we're currently going through, he looked at history to see when that had ever happened before. And the last time a paradigm shift of this magnitude had happened is during Kepler's lifetime, and due to Kepler in large part. And it was the shift between what there is called the pre-modern and the modern, when the scientific revolution happened. And it was kind of put into motion by Copernicus, Kepler, Galileo, Newton, and Descartes. Those were the five main players. When suddenly it seemed as though, and it took a while for this notion to plant itself in consciousness, because it was considered blasphemous, and you got burned at the stake if you thought this or said it out loud. Not if you thought it, but if you said it out loud.
What is the thing that you couldn't say?
You couldn't say that the Earth rotated the sun.
The Earth revolved around the sun.
Yes, because the Earth was supposed to be at the center of the universe, according to the Bible, really. And the sun went up and down. And
so that's the Copernican revolution. Where does Kepler fit in?
Kepler lived about slightly after Copernicus. Copernicus died just before Kepler was born.
And in
Kepler
1571.
Kepler was born in 1570. Yes, and died in 1630. He died at 60. He was a contemporary of Galileo. Galileo was about 10, 15 years older. He was a contemporary of Tycho de Brahe, who was a great, wild mathematician, astronomer in Prague. He was a nobleman, and he's in our play. He's just a fantastically exotic, great character. And then Newton and Descartes followed and kind of continued. So it was during the lifetime of Tycho, Galileo, and Kepler when they really revolutionized. They took the Copernican model, which was not entirely accurate, and then added to it. They were able to really measure the skies and make computations. And Kepler came up with the three laws of planetary motion and really put everything in place. His model of the universe, which was totally revolutionary, is the one that we still buy, the one we still believe is true.
And so that, tell us just in thumbnail sketch of what that model is.
Well, that model is the one that we know, that the Earth and all the planets rotate the sun, basically, and that the stars are fixed, and they also revolve the sun, I guess is the term.
So you have Kepler, and you have this paradigm shift, and I've often wondered when there's a paradigm shift like that takes place in universities in Germany and suddenly the world, the Earth is no longer the center of the universe, and then they think the sun is the center of the universe, and then later on they know the sun's not even the center of the universe. But how does that change people's daily life?
Well, one of the things that changed is that what they call the whole scientific model, that people believed what the Bible said to be the fact, and no one, you weren't allowed to question it. Of course people question it, the scientists question it, although they weren't called scientists in those days. And so this whole model of, okay, what's true, is that cup made out of solid matter, or is it made out of something else? And do I just make up some theory and then promote it, or do I look for evidence and use the evidence to create an experiment, which I then correct according to whether or not it's fitting further data, that the model is my model fitting the data? And that really was Kepler's genius.
He invented scientific method?
Yes, basically. He was this great genius. He was a much greater genius, really, than Galileo, although Galileo is more famous, and that's one of the stories our narrative explores, is how did that happen, that Kepler became, even if when you go to Germany, I've discovered, I told people I was doing a play on Kepler, and they said, oh yeah, wasn't he like, that's what people here say too, wasn't he like an astronomer or something?
And right.
I mean, he invented the whole science of optics. He figured out how the eye worked, wrote a book about it. He came up with the three laws of planetary motion, that planets move in elliptical orbits. That was just completely revolutionary. He really laid all the groundwork for integral calculus, and he figured out that there was something called force from a distance, that the sun exerted a force that affected the movement of the planets. Nobody had any idea. And the big paradigm, it's so exciting, because Ralph identified the moment. There's in chaos theory, he's one of the founders of chaos theory, when you look at history, you look for bifurcation moments, these moments of split. And he identified the moment of the paradigm shift in a correspondence between Kepler and Galileo, when Kepler changed the word spirit to the word force. Everyone thought it was spirits moving planets around, and he said, no, things move because of forces, not because of heavenly spirits. And that shifted the paradigm.
And eventually that works its way into the popular imagination.
Absolutely, and into the notion of gravity.
So set up the play for us, the work in progress that you're going to be doing this Saturday.
The play is the story of a contemporary woman astronomer who has a very radical notion of the nature of the universe. She believes that everything is interconnected in some way. So you can't really make do any kind of action that doesn't in some way affect everything. And she's come up with this theory due to her investigations of planetary spacing. The planets actually, in our solar system, and in several others, not all others, actually fall into this mathematical precision. And no one knows why. It's a huge mystery still in astronomy. And it's led her to believe that there's something going on that has to do with communication, sentience, interconnection in the universe. But she can't say that aloud, just as Kepler did, but Galileo didn't. And Copernicus couldn't. Copernicus' book on the revolution of the heavenly spheres, he wouldn't publish. And a student came and wrote it and published it. And in the first published volume was laid on his chest as he lay dying.
Oh, my goodness.
This book that... Anyway, so we have this contemporary astronomer who's facing very similar issues, where she cannot safely articulate her vision in public without severe repercussions within the academic institution, which she's a part of. She'll lose her credibility, which she'll lose her research funding, she won't be able to publish papers, she won't be able to do her research anymore. So she's very loath to express this opinion out loud. And Kepler appears and says, you have to. The whole species is on the brink of extinction. And if people don't start saying what they suspect to be true, which is we're interconnected, it's one luminous web of being, very similar perhaps to the theories that the Buddhist
right,
monk
we have a Rinpoche on deck.
The Rinpoche will maybe articulate similar things. that unless we really start to buy that theory, we're in really big trouble.
Now, it sounds somewhat like chaos theory and the sort of cliche, but that it's one thing that everybody knows. If a butterfly flaps his wings in Tokyo, there's a tidal wave. So, you know.
Yes, we're basing the play on that. That we're hoping the play will be one of those butterfly flaps.
Now, I mean, it's tricky business for you, a non-scientist, to put a scientific hypothesis in the mouth of a character. Is this a real hypothesis, or did you make it up?
It's a real hypothesis based on theories that Ralph has been contemplating. Ralph Abraham, who's really one of the greatest mathematicians around, as far as I understand, on the teachings and theories of Rupert Sheldrake and their good friends, who's come up with this theory about morphic genetic field, and on the theories of Irvin Laszlo, who's a brilliant scientist, a kind of outsider type, who's come up with theories that about the nature of the universe that are based on quantum vacuum field and Akashic records. And so these are all articulated within the scientific.
And all those guys have tenure. What's your character worried about?
Rupert doesn't have tenure, and Ralph has struggled a great deal of his life. He's confronted all kinds of amazing challenges in his life because of his theories.
Is that right? Mm-hmm.
And I just also talked with Stuart Kaufman, another great scientist from here, who has a new book coming out called Reinventing the Sacred, about new theories about what he actually thinks God is. And he's also a bit nervous about another great, great mind.
Well, let's talk about that, because the subtitle of the Kepler Project is When Science Lost the Soul. What does that mean? What do you mean by soul?
It's something we've been... This is a Ralph Abraham title. He was my collaborator. We've been working together on this project for quite a while now, about 3 years. And he believes... He's done a lot of research on the history of the soul and human thought. And he believes that that science, until this paradigm shift, was deeply infused with a mystical worldview. That mysticism, spirituality, a sense of wonder and awe at the whole nature of reality and kind of luminousness, was always a part of science. And most of the scientists, until this paradigm shift, were deeply spiritual, and their insights came in part from their spiritual understanding. And when this paradigm shift happened, this spiritual, not religious necessarily, but this spiritual view of the world became severed from science, and everything became particularized and mechanized. So we now have a mechanical universe, and it's incorrect. It's an incorrect view. So what we think of as the soul is this interconnected web of being. It's in Buddhism, what they call the existence of the non-self. Or in many forms of Eastern thought, there's this existence of a fabric of being that's beyond particularity, that's beyond self, that self arises out of this field of emptiness. And so what we're talking about is that field, the field of emptiness that everything arises out of, passes back into, including universes, and that we're a part of, but that is not only existent in individuality and particularity. And that's the soul.
It's such a double-edged sword, because one of the great liberations of the Enlightenment was precisely to sever science and observation of the world from popes and people who are going to burn you at the stake for heresy.
Yes, absolutely. The severance of science from dogmatic religion was a fantastic moment of progress in human consciousness. But then the scientific field itself has become dogmatic. And so the danger is not religion. The danger in many ways is dogma. And can we allow thinkers who don't follow dogma to actually exist within any institutional field? That's the big question. So then how does new thought arise? How does new understanding arise?
Well, science at its best actually does allow new thought and new understanding, tests the living heck out of it, tries to prove it wrong. When it can't prove it wrong, it becomes right.
But there's something called paradigm blindness, which also exists within science, which both Rupert and I've heard about this a fair amount. It's a really interesting phenomenon. that if what you're looking for is a certain thing, like if you're looking under a test, under a microscope for a certain biological reality, a certain way cells relate, that cells might be relating in different ways, but because you're not looking for this different way of relating, you actually don't see it.
Right.
And what we're examining is the whole nature of paradigm blindness.
We're talking to Nina Wise, who's a theater artist who's presenting The Kepler Project, When Science Lost the Soul, on Saturday night at the Lenzig Performing Arts Center at 7:30 right here in Santa Fe. That's on the 1st of March. Now, you're also involved in a completely different project called Election Year, a Festival of Optimistic Voices. That's not, I don't think that's happening in Santa Fe, but it's a very interesting project.
Yes, is it, it is.
It
oh,
is
yes,
happening
it's
in Santa Fe.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
For 3 nights over the course of 3 months.
And, oh, right. I have that on a piece of paper right in front of me. If I could read, it'd be good. Well, tell us about this.
Election Year is based on the same principle that we're on the brink of a paradigm shift. So I'm sort of the paradigm shift artist in residence at the Lenzig for a little while.
You're pushing the shift.
Yes, hopefully, or at least participating in it, hopefully.
Well, hang on. So we'll talk about this in a second. But we understand the Copernican Revolution and Kepler's role and all of that, to some extent. What is the nature of the new paradigm shift?
Again, it's the shift is that everything is connected. So,
it's the sort of Tibetan worldview of this web.
Well, not just Tibetan, but yes, it's in Buddhism that's certainly articulated. It's one of the places where it's articulated and arising in contemporary culture, which is exciting.
So it's the end of the mechanistic view of the universe.
And we experience that. I mean, it sounds very abstract, but actually, if you go to a doctor, you might be afraid to tell that doctor that you're actually seeing an acupuncturist as well, because acupuncture isn't considered part of the dogma of Western science. Or you might have an experience of spontaneous healing that happens to a certain amount of people, and doctors just sort of overlook that. Well, obviously, people are having the experience. That's paradigm blindness. But you might be afraid, or a near-death experience. Ken Ring tells this great story. He's a near-death experience expert where he's in a room full of people telling them, giving a lecture of doctors, telling them about the gazillion interviews he's done with people who've had these NDE experiences. And a cardiologist raises his hand and said, look, you know, if that really were true, I'm a cardiologist, my patients would have had one of them in my lifetime career, would have had one of these experiences. I've never heard of one. And his wife is sitting next to him and she raises her hand. She says, I had one. I'd never could tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're experiencing this daily.
Right, right.
This particularization of reality. We experience it that we can't go to a regular Albertsons and get organic food. That organic food is considered the whole foods regime.
Right.
And that organic food is just something for a certain kind of people. That somehow toxins in the environment are not affecting everybody.
Right.
The way that
although that is shifting already. I have to say, I know a woman who can barely put food on the table and she buys organic food. Makes $8 an hour, she buys organic food.
It's shifting. It's part of the shift. But the shift has to do with if we put toxins in the environment in China, it's going to somehow come back into our pet food. It doesn't, that this is an interconnected system, that the weather patterns are interconnected, that the way we dispose of our toilet paper is going to affect the weather,
right.
That the hurricanes that are happening are part of an interconnected system. So we're experiencing this daily. And until we get this not only clear in our minds, but then implemented in our social systems, in our economic systems, in our medical systems, in our food chains, in the way we relate to one another in community.
So right now it exists in Tibetan monasteries, in the Santa Fe Institute, in the minds of certain theater artists like you, and as it spreads out, society will change, is the idea.
The whole thing will change, not just society, but yes, society, the way we think, human culture, the way we relate to one another, the whole system is going through a big shift because there's a new understanding. And it's in every single aspect of our lives, how we treat the dying, how we pray, everything, how we look at a dogma, the whole shmageggy. So we're bringing in a number of thinkers who are from different fields, who are articulating in their way this shift.
And so on March 15th...
And we feel like during an election year, this particular story is really important to tell because it's really good news.
And optimistic voices.
Yes, and the other really exciting thing is that we feel like it's a single narrative, that there's one story going on, and it's not like, oh, in the medical world, if you do this, blah, 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 and then, oh, if in the economic world, you do this, blah, 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 blah. It is a single story with like a center point, and all of these issues are spokes on a single story, and that there is a particular platform, electoral platform, progressive platform, that has all of these different spokes emanating from a central vision. And that central vision is shared by gazillion people now, but it hasn't been articulated as one story. So we're presenting people and showing what all the spokes are and saying this is one story and there are a lot of us. There's a movement afoot and we're going to make this happen together. We're going to make it happen. And we're hoping that this series will be really inspirational to people.
And that's something people can look out for. The Lenzic March 15th is an evening called Interconnection Transforming Medicine. Then April 5th is Life in a Win-Win World. And then on May 25th, it's Women Transforming the World. And is there another one after that?
No, that's and then we'll have two in the fall. We're speaking to some fantastic people who really want to come be a part of this.
Well, go ahead. We've got
just a
minute left.
One is Michael Lerner, Charlotte Brody, and Carolyn Raffensperger. Carolyn Raffensperger came up with something called the precautionary principle. These are just great speakers. You leave the theater. I've heard them all speak, just kind of dancing and jumping up and down for joy. And in a time of such dire straits, to be this deeply moved, inspired, laughing, crying, dancing in the streets. It's such a great thing to do for the human heart, the human mind, and the human soul. And the second one is Rupert Sheldrake, Hazel Henderson, who's a biologist, who's come up with these great theories about, and he's funny, he's from London, he's funny and Oxfordian and brilliant, progressive visionary. Hazel Henderson, who's an economist, and Judy Wicks, who has a cafe in Philadelphia. And then the women in May are Jane Hirschfield, Susan Griffin, Joan Halifax, Natalie Goldberg, and Wendy Johnson. All fantastic, brilliant, deeply moving speakers.
And so all of this is election year, a festival of optimistic voices. Meanwhile, Nina Wise, who's visiting us from, you live in the Bay Area.
Yes, I do.
In California, will be presenting The Kepler Project, When Science Lost the Soul. It's part of the Lenzic's Under Construction series, which I have to say is a wonderful series where people present work in progress, and it's just great to be able to see it. And are you going to be asking for comments from the audience?
Absolutely, and we might even be asking for new titles. And we've done this twice before in different versions, and people have loved this play. We've had fantastic success with it so far.
The last thing that I read was that that first act was written and the second and third act were still under construction?
We've done the first act, we've done the first and the second act, there are two acts, and then I took out a major character, rewrote the whole thing, and now we're integrating all the music, and the music's fantastic. The play may sound dry to you, but it's not at all. It's really lively, it's really about the lives of these incredibly interesting characters, and it deals with a very interesting contemporary issue.
Nina Wise, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Khenchul Lodro Taye Rinpoche. Stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Khenchul Lodro Taye Rinpoche. He is visiting us in Santa Fe, and he is giving a public talk tomorrow on death and dying, and also a workshop on Saturday and Sunday called Cutting Through the Four Attachments. Welcome to the Radio Cafe. And his translator, Paloma, is with us. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure.
So let's talk about the word dharma. What does the word dharma mean?
Oh, yeah. Tani dharma jipati ton dakare zekhyore zena ne. Tani chubi ton tane, kyopi ton teni kala teni nokhyore. Kare zere zena ne. Kong dharma jipat lam tih go ni tani nyam sulem bi go ni ne sem ka nang ni tani nyumo bi dungar ka tsawa dungar ka gyu tani fang ni chu ni taka sem tandur ni ti top ki tani dungar li htop rok yo pa te ti mangla teni dharma jipa te te la zekhi ore ze teni nang la gum gyavya tang cha changma teni nang la yore teni re ze.
So Rinpoche said the dharma, if we look at the meaning, it has that etymological meaning has a twofold sense, and one of a transformation or change that takes place, and the other as the protection. And what that means, when we talk about Dharma, it's a path that is practiced. And through practicing that, and then what we're doing is we're transforming all of our disturbing and afflictive emotions. And we're transforming all of those actions and afflictions that are the causes for suffering. And so we have transformation or change taking place through our practice. And in the taming of the mind in that way, and then as we stop engaging in the causes of suffering, we're protected from the result, suffering itself, and so there's also the sense of protection. So when we talk about Buddhist Dharma, that's the sense.
So we talk in Buddhist practice about the eradication of suffering. Is that possible, and for all sentient beings? How is that possible when most sentient beings can't practice Dharma, like dogs and cats and mice and so on?
Hakasoni konto dungal tawa ne meba zoba ge che yoreze ge ne nang be chulok na do mixal ne semchen tamshet ge dungo meba zoba di kante chik si ge yore kayen sana shimi dan ki dan den konto nyamna che chog mando
tendi de tani ta te nga chu tani nyamnen pa nam ki ne sem kana la monlam ta tang tang ne tani shamba ta nyang ji ko ni rjan la jen ki che to monum ta ta tham che dung li thar wa ta ne tham che de wa chi dam bi che to monum ma chu ta phi yo re a yin na yang ta ni ngo ni ta ni ton ro kha hi ka nang la yo sik ka re hwe na ton ro ka nang la gyam cho chen bu nang la mi sem da wa ha chang ga sar wo yin kan ga ta ni ton ro kha hi yo te de chu yin na fang sha kang yin lang sha kang yin hi te pi hi re kong cho la hab na kong chu gyang tam kan yo re nyong nyong yo re tham che ke thab ga re di na na ba kon da thab ga ma re won chang ta ni khoe na na sang di pi lug la ne ye tak tang tan ro yin chang ne lu ten jan ta ta ni je wo gyap ni ne ta ni ke wa je ni ne mi lu ten len ro wa ta ne khirp chang ke lu ten len ro yir ni kap na kon tu bian ko khyo re nga tu ti go ni ta ni sam lo tang khyo re ze ti go ni sam lo tang ni ta ni tham che dung ar di tor wa chik chung o thab sam ya tang ne chik deb jin ta ne tani nyamnen khan te chu yin maung ba na khonso sang gi dam shang chup sen khrin ni tu gyur song yin ni kam na tani mulam yo re khonso ki pu shi ni nga chop dewa shi ni top song tan dik duk ze yo mar sem chen tham che tap kang dur ki go ni ne tani dung se bi tab la ne tani she ki yo re te ka cha tre ze.
So there's a lot in that question there. And on the one hand, yes, as practitioners, then we're constantly making prayers and aspirations for the welfare of all sentient beings and cultivating love and compassion and engaging in actions to help alleviate suffering and bring them happiness, and especially making aspiration prayers that eventually all living beings will be completely freed from suffering and find a state of ultimate happiness. And so there's a lot of prayer and so forth. That's our goal. That's what we want. And for the most part, it is true that in their present circumstances, with the exception of maybe some very rare sentient beings, they talk about some mythical beings in the ocean and so forth, but for the most part, then animals do not have the intelligence to receive teachings and engage in the actions that eliminate the causes of suffering and thus find happiness in the course of this life. But from the Buddhist perspective, then there are more than one lifetime. And so then, though right now they might be born in a hungry ghost realm or an animal realm and so forth, eventually those circumstances will change and they may have, through certain causes and conditions, the opportunity to be born into an intelligent life such as humans and to meet with a path in which they can be liberated from suffering and find happiness. Also, when we engage in the practice, the ultimate goal is the state of Buddhahood or of a bodhisattva, a saint. And the point is for the welfare of others. So it's not like we're just trying to help ourselves when we get there and we can just hang out real happy and now everything's okay, but actually that we're looking at then that greater potential of then engaging in the actions of benefiting others, of helping others to tame their minds and be able to free themselves in these ways.
What is the role of faith in Buddhism, is there a religious faith or belief that is necessary, or is it all about practice of the Dharma?
It's a very good question. Thank you. Then, now Santi Pilugla, Santi Roniki Karison Resenane, Churchet Darwin Sergeant, the Nepertalanga, Longshai, Gushman Sonina, then, Karison Resenane, So Tapate, then, Jimson Tigoni, Hinine, then, Yichiki Vatimalane, Yichipi Tapa, the Hure, not to Turto Shekhure, then, Over it, and in our Sandy Pilublan, Jimson Hippigoni, Tapadroya, the Teg Regoson, Tipshana Sandy Grianan, Sandy Bay Yapore, Tamshek and Anim Shop to Jurari, Tipshana, then his Sandy Glaps at Tamshet, the Dembare, Capson Dogo, Congo Gare Lamna, Therese, any Mompi Tapigoni, then he came Longo Mundo. When Naxer Yang Tapachik Yinguna, then he Rumba Gentone, then he consulse la Tarsia Pachini, Tarser Yang Tapat, and if you want Gentone. Tani Kongo, Karekson, and Nawas Handi Pilublayan, Keran to Tani, Ate, Shapachini, Jimson Gigoni, Tani Nipakeni, Yamnishina, Dikio also.
So that's a very good question. Oh, he said that in English. Anyways, in the Buddhist tradition, Rinpoche said, then the Buddha himself, he said, like gold that goes through a careful process of purification and refinement, then examine my words well, do not accept them out of mere respect. And he encouraged us then to examine and investigate, to find through our own logical process and our own experience that what he taught was true. And so faith in Tibetan Buddhism is not one that is just based on a blind faith, a belief in something without logic. It's ideally actually a confident belief that comes through our investigation and examination that we arrive at logically and experientially, to that something that we come to we know to be true from that process. And so the Buddhist ideal kind of faith is that kind of faith, one based in logic and reasoning. And so the Buddha, he said, don't just accept my words because I'm a Buddha and Buddhas are supposed to be exalted and so forth, but and then just that we have to believe it, that it, everything that they say is true and take refuge in them and so forth. Blind faith is not necessary, he said. And that's the example is like gold. Gold goes through a gradual process of purification or refinement from smelting and so forth onward. And so too, he said, like gold, examine my words well. Examine them to find the truth yourself. And so the kind of faith that is most encouraged is one based on logic and reasoning and our own investigation.
So the doctrine of reincarnation, first of all, how does the reincarnation work? And also, is that something that you have come to yourself through a process of reasoning and discovery, or is it something you have to believe in?
How goes on? Di yangir yangir kewala di kante chigen kerang takshin chene samling eba chong song yang mena kemongwe tepa tik ke lang song kanyin serne nang bechi luk nang gare.
Yeah. Tani tela tani shirtan tani ngatsu tani nawa sandi pi lukla nan tani sandi ki tani gemsam shok chigni sandi ki tani yopar tani song yore kewa tani yin kewa ngapshi yoze tani song yore shok chik tere shok nini kare re zena nan tani nawa sandi pi lukla nan tmubu hni lukla takshang shapap shi sona hamchit tani nang sem tang na tani di yur hamchit zonwa tang zimba hamchit Latsu Molatanghio, Pantongio, Patamchet, the Gifkin Temdit Latini, Temdit Goni, Tamchet, the Shongare. Mubu Niluk Tantumbigoni, Shonguna, Tani Gimson Tigoni, Jana, Kewa Nama Yopertapate, Tani Atunasanji, the Dubiaore. One Jantani Hobjong Yapochik, Tani Shiguhundu, Tikola Hobjong Shikon, and Atsu Mixer Katsamazer, Tina Gimson Gigoni. Then you bembo, Nikandi, Shinifion Hunduk, Hibali, Bembo, Dushinifion, Otta Bembo, Nihiba, Munifion, Otta Matap, then you got to take the Shapashi on a consumption like Gordo, Tatani Gimson needed. Dave Jenta Gimson, somebody and a tow with their dancing, then in Zambu, Langlane, Bogu Mambu, then you care a Muni tank young can. They are when I take Pama de to tank and Duke Zeni, Kontu Kala Nyambat and Mimban, Junko. 딱 샹샤피 촉파 믹서 급 촉니네 되니 뎀바 무니 임바데 되니 할리피 되니 보고 똥착마 보더니 잠불랑라 뎁톤이오레 더나마 산지 빌룩라 흥니야 송요레 개와나마 짱칸요 덕직부고 하고 덥그래제
네서
어 디프셔나가 저 개와나 없이 듬킨 듭셰 그릭바다 김선 하장마 보레 요마르 제니 듭고나 김선 요 여직과가 저 몸이 요빠치 요마르
So there are several things I could talk about here. One is that at a certain degree, it's something that the Buddha saw through his own wisdom and was able to talk about past and future lives. And then secondly, that within that tradition, there is all kinds of lines of reasoning or logic that we can examine. Examining the inner mind as our subjective experience, examining outer objects as the outer environment. This whole examination of subjective, objective, dualistic perception and everything that arises to our perceptions has been examined very carefully. And one of the main sort of thrusts of the teaching is that everything is interdependently occurring. That is, it's occurring dependent upon causes and contributing conditions. And here, then in this specific case of reincarnation, of being born again and so forth, it's an examination of the way things are according to our basic reality in the logic on how things can and do come about. And so there is actually a logical basis and many very fine and subtle lines of reasoning that can be studied that establish that there is past and future lives. And this is called valid cognition or tema in Tibetan. And it's we look at the mind as being conscious matter, is what it's called, versus unconscious matter, like inanimate matter cells and so forth. And the question is then, what comes from what? If everything's interdependently occurring and the causes are similar to the effects, then some of the reasoning is that consciousness comes from consciousness and inanimate matter comes from inanimate matter. Could inanimate matter come from consciousness? Could consciousness come from inanimate matter? And so there's this very thorough investigation of the possibilities and what comes from what causes what effects. So that's another reason. A third is that these days many children have been found who have remembered their past lives. And we're not just talking about they say it, but that the governments and people have come in and examined and so forth and found that what their stories and so on have been true. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, and there have been books that are written on them and so forth. So that's another reason. And the Buddha himself, he said there are many beings to remember past lifetimes, and that in and of itself is a direct, you know, relationship and one of the proofs that we can look at. And so on the one hand, we can examine and find many reasons why there would be reincarnation, past and future lives, but there are not so many logical reasons that can actually completely disprove it without a doubt.
We're talking to Khenpo Lodro Taye Rinpoche, and he will be giving a talk tomorrow night, February 29th, on death and dying at 6:30 at the United Church of Santa Fe on Arroyo Chamizo. What is the Tibetan understanding of what happens during the death process and after a person dies?
Chiwi kabla, nam
chiwi kabla. Sain gonda kerang chiwa kabla chigeorwa. So kande chik, di nang bechulo bingorla kande chik reju geore. Di nam she la sopa. Kare chik chung geore. Dor duva.
Oya tere. Tani ngatu chiwi ni kabla nam jikte kande yona tekhiba haliba kachembore. Tani di ni kabla na tani ngatu wambo tamchek ram kingak ni na. Then you remember Jin Ton, Semrak Batamche, Tungar, Nirimbab Jin Ton, Chowing Ola, then you check the week Nikapko, Torna Tamche, Rimbab Jinto, then you get me, then you know who you're a dear Nikabla. Deep Shirna, then you dear Nikapko, then you Torna Tetana, then you Nato Tarta, Sumbu Nikapko, then you Sumbu Nikapdenica, Mirbayo. Deep Shirna Tarta Nikon, Chivir Nikabla, then you tap the Girpochik, then you shit, Chivir Nikamna, Jiva Tan Deva. Some church on Jigna Toba Tamchet may be gone in Rana Soso in Hutter Candishin in Hugo, then Irjan Lion, then Europa Shenayan Candishin, Europa Shego and Douglas of Patamchete, Tirnik Capcotani, the Pokaluk Chipoyang Mare, then in Omashana, then Mubu Nilupe, Musukhanatani, Pokat Zere, Tishernachik, Honsu Luktor Dezeva Mine Banner, Mubu Nilup, then Koran, hățor, a te tot în ifia creze. Demba imbazic.
So, of course, that would take a lot of discussion. But Rinpoche said basically it's a discussion on the experience that we consciously go through as we die, because through the dying process, then our consciousness and all of our faculties are gradually fading, and we'll step one by one, until finally there's this, if the last aspect is our mind, of kind of an obvious or perceptible aspect of consciousness, which also fades into a less perceptible aspect of consciousness. And so it's a lengthy explanation of what we feel as we die, and how then to relate to that. And the perspective is that that process of dying is very much connected to our process of living and our conscious experience, and that we should all prepare for death. And in preparing for it, then we can know what to expect, and we can die with ease and without fear and without, without doubt and so forth. And so there are very lengthy explanations on how to prepare for death, how to go through the process of dying, and also what happens after we die with the consciousness and so forth. And in preparing for it, it helps to alleviate a lot of the fears and anxieties that we have. And so as someone alive, it's kind of like our responsibility also to learn how to die, not just how to live. And so there are many teachings and if we understand that process of dying, it brings greater insight in how to work with ourselves while we're living, how to live, how to use this human life well, and so forth. So they're very integrally, very much related. And so also how to help other people die and so forth. And this isn't just Tibetan custom alone, or that it's just one tradition so much as it's more an examination of the actual process that we go through, which is kind of common across the board for everyone, and how to work with that as it comes.
Now, you're teaching a workshop this Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 5 all day on Saturday and Sunday at the end of the Alameda. It's called Cutting Through the Four Attachments. Mm-hmm. What are the four attachments?
Rakpa ngatso tani halipi jinba chakpa mangtak dhugore ta tani lihka lihtsur gandhibshi yinziyate khurwala jinba tangdak chik. Dev jintana ngatso janla rukpa shepikni kamna pansim jigoni tamchik pshamba tang nyangrje zi lapka yore ta wonkyang pshamba tang nyangrje tamchik dhakpo chik chak tupka yomarak zangma chik di nangla rangtun dhik yore. Dib shirna tani dhikabla jantun shepikni kamna jen dhak tonla jinna jinba tani jodba tangdak. Tani karreko.
So the first of these is the attachment to what we call samsara, which is our cyclic existence, you could say ordinary experience. And so it's an examination of the way in which we, the word actually for attachment here has a sense of almost like obsessive fixation or grasping. And what does that do for us? We have too much attachment to our temporary, ordinary experience, how that affects us and how it affects our actions. And so then the first attachment is the attachment to samsara. The jemba korwa la jena karari di dochok. And so that's the first that we're working with. The second is that the path is based on benefiting others and selfless altruism, love and compassion. And oftentimes we talk about benefiting others and we talk about love and compassion, but it's not yet pure because it's still very much mixed with our own self-interests and our attachments to ourselves and what we're getting out of that helping. And so it says where there is attachment to others, there isn't a true, pure, I mean, where there is attachment to oneself, there isn't a pure concern for the welfare of others. And so it's learning how to decipher that attachment to ourselves versus genuine altruism and wish to benefit others. So that's the second one.
Oh yeah, there. Then you somehow made carries in an horwala jenna nimjungman.
Di kanda tanda ke.
Oh, mara mara, te mara. Then you zumba piona tawa manze. Te carries in a gum kateni zapo chik teni fiakiore. Then you gum. Nilook Zenanga to the Yeni Koranga Yilukarians, Tokhini, the Tela Gumgapirni Kabnana, Wena, Nzumbachik, Telanata, nzamba nga tsu zong zeng ge sem ge takpar nam to kun zamba yore ta mai bi nzamba me pi go ni te ni gum gyap tsur te ni phya kre ti mang la te ni nzamba chong na ta wa man ze de te ni chi kare ze go
So then the third is where there is a fixation or grasp fixation or perception in terms of a subject and object, there is no authentic view. And this is a very profound explanation on the profound level of meditation, which is meditation on the way things are, the ultimate nature of phenomena, what is timelessly and has always been. And this true nature of all things is what we want to realize. And it is beyond, it transcends our ordinary conceptual mind. We always think in terms of a subject and an object. So our mind is grasping to, you could say, or fixating, perceiving in terms of objective appearances. So we have this very dual experience that is always conceptualized in terms of self and other and so forth. And it says where there is that grasping, where is that reification or fixation, there isn't an authentic view of what is. And so it's pointing out that differentiation there. And the second
that's the third one?
That's the third one. And the fourth maybe it's in here. Korwala jena nge jung me, I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay.
I think for the ordinary person, self and other is normal. I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. I'm not you, you're not me. How do you understand that on a deeper level?
So that is what characterizes our relative experience, is in terms of these conceptual thoughts that are always fixating, in terms of thinking, you're there, I'm here, over here. And that is what we talk about as being relative truth. It's kind of the nature of our relative reality. However, we're looking at here what is ultimately the case. What is the true nature of your mind? What is the true nature of my mind? And when we examine that true nature, it's not different. And it is transcends this ordinary experience that thinks in terms of the way in which we grasp to things. And so this weekend, over the couple of days, I'll be clarifying that view and understanding of meditation and profound levels of meditative absorption, and also that wisdom that transcends ordinary mind's experience in that way.
Khenchul Lodro Taye Rinpoche, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. For having us.
Let's see, tomorrow, February 29th, he is giving a talk on death and dying from 6:30 to 8:30 at the United Church of Santa Fe at 1804 Arroyo Chamizo in Santa Fe. And then on March 1st and 2nd, he's giving a workshop, which is 9 to 5 each day, called Cutting Through the Four Attachments, and that's at the Inn of the Alameda at 303 East Alameda Street in Santa Fe. Contact, if you are interested in these events, Eric Swanson, whose telephone number is 474-0776, or you can write to him at eric@ericswanson.com. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at the email radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you've missed any details about Eric Swanson's phone number or anything else, you can go to the podcast as well. We put it up not too long after the show each day. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan pays tribute to Black History Month with a performance of Joyful Suite for Gospel Choir and Jazz Ensemble. broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company. My name is Mary Charlotte. Tomorrow is Friday. Robert Knott will be with us. Lots of other good stuff, too, so stay tuned to Santa Fe's only public radio station, KSFR. Hasta la vista. Bye.